The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hey, this is Jonathan Coulton, singer, songwriter, internet superstar, and you're listening to Flame On.
It's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon. Never seen it quite so clear. When my heart is breaking, I can close my eyes. It's already here.
Welcome to Flame On. I am Brian the Bear. I'm here with Pat, the Talking Bearskin Rug.
What's going on, everybody?
And we have, probably, to me at least, one of the most special guests we've had on this show yet. You've known him from video games, from podcasts, from television, graphic novels, audiobooks, cruises. I don't think that there's a genre, a media that he has not yet conquered. The one and only musical half of the fantastic NPR radio show, Ask Me Another, Jonathan Coulton. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. What kind words. I have a lot to live up to.
So I am, of course, for those of you who listen to the show, I'm a musician. This is something I'm passionate about, but it is not my day job. I am a programmer by trade. And so I think when I first discovered Jonathan Coulton's music and read about your backstory, I learned that you had a similar background of sorts. I mean, obviously musician, definitely, but before you, I guess, quit full-time your day job, you were a programmer, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I wrote software for about 9 years.
Wow. And it did not beat down your soul so much that you've been in your spare time while you were still, I'm sure, programming during the day. You were writing music. Is that when you started the Thing a Week project while you were still working the day job?
No, Thing a Week was the first thing I did after I quit the day job. I had been, first of all, let me say that I liked writing software. It was a fun job. I don't think I wouldn't have stayed in it for 9 years if it had been terrible, but it was definitely like, you know, I felt like there were other things I wanted to do. While I was working that job, I would write and record occasionally. And it was right after I left the job that I started Thing a Week. I think it was about 2 weeks after I became unemployed officially that I started.
So it was it because I have in my software group, we have other musicians, of course, and a lot of us are weekend warriors. Was it something that you realized, like you said, you wanted to do more, and then unfortunately the opportunity presented itself when you were let go, or was it a bold decision to strike out on your own?
Oh, no, no. I made the decision. I had been, you know, trying to talk myself into it for years. I used a number of things. I mean, I had put out a CD of songs that I'd recorded. I'd been working with John Hodgman a little bit on a variety show that he did in Brooklyn called Little Gray Book Lectures. I had toured with him on his book tour. So, you know, I had gotten my feet wet a little bit in at least the concept of being a professional entertainer. I made the decision that, to try quitting the day job and seeing how far, I could take the other thing for a while.
Well, and obviously it paid off successfully and there's nothing more gratifying, I guess, than taking a risk like that and it paying off. So, I mean, I definitely draw inspiration from that. I'm still working day jobs as a coder, and I do like it. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, there's only so much TPS reports and login pages you can write.
Yeah, sure. No, I know. And you know, it's like it definitely was. I mean, I frankly was a little surprised that it worked out the way it did. I don't think, you know, it wasn't as if I left and I was like, oh, here we go. This is definitely going to work. It was more like, oh, what am I doing? So I continue to be surprised and delighted that it has turns out to have been the right decision.
Now, you mentioned John Hodgman. Of course, those of our audience who are familiar with the areas of my expertise and the subsequent books ending in That Is All, which I was sad when we finally got the audiobook that you were only referenced. I don't think – or did you do like a short thing for it, or did you – because you didn't play the same role that you had previously.
I didn't know. I had a much smaller role. I did a couple of things. Honestly, they all kind of run together for me. I couldn't say exactly what I did. I think I did a couple of things.
But, I mean, so those of you who don't know in the audience, basically, John Hodgman writes these fantastic books of false fact. Think of the anthology, or I don't know, it's almost encyclopedic, but more jumping around in topics, you know, from mole people to I can't think of the creatures he named. But anyway, your character in those books was sort of the uncivilized mountain man that was slowly being civilized by Mr. Hodgman's character. And just so happened that as a mountain man, you were a musical prodigy and would provide accompaniment. Was that a character idea that you brought to the project?
Yes. And it's hard to no, that was his idea. It's hard to say if it was one of those facts that is supposed to be true, or one of those facts that is supposed to be a fact that John Hodgman thinks is true. Many, many different layers of truths in those books. And it's, I think we moved pretty fluidly between the idea that I actually was a feral mountain man and the idea that that was just a story that John Hodgman told to himself and to other people for reasons. I don't know. It was a weird idea.
I mean, it's delightfully truthy, is whatever it was, whatever level of truth you accept. It was delightfully ridiculous and truthy. But the audiobooks were such an awesome venue for that character, that role, and I guess, like you said, sort of that approach and your entrance into all of this from there and your Thing a Week, which was a podcast, correct?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, it was published using podcast technology, but it wasn't as if I talked. It was just songs.
Based on that experience with podcasting, and you did another show, I believe, as well, correct?
Another podcast, you mean? Yeah, for a while, I did a podcast for Popular Science magazine called the PopSci Podcast.
And were you was it like just a musical role, or were you actually like a part of the show doing a?
No, I did interviews with people who were connected with articles in that month's issue of the magazine. So I would talk to a scientist or sometimes just a reporter who had written the story. So it was sort of an interview show, but there was a little bit of a ostensibly I was doing the podcast from the moon. That was the joke. So there were other things happening in that podcast as well.
Okay.
But primarily it was an interview show.
And from that, you also produced another album, and I don't have the title in front of me, but I didn't realize, I was going back through the albums that I don't have, which amazingly, I don't have all your albums. Some of my favorite songs are actually from there, Better and I Feel Fantastic. I did not realize came off of that, was like an EP that came with the magazine?
Yeah, that was the idea of the PopSci editors. They wanted me to do a soundtrack for one of the issues of the magazine, so they hired me to write a bunch of songs that were related to articles in the issue. So yeah, that's called Our Bodies, Ourselves, Our Cybernetic Arms.
And I mean, it remains, at least I Feel Fantastic, probably one of the most challenging of your songs to sing myself when I do the karaoke version at karaoke. It's that and the one you did, I think, for a They Might Be Giants songwriting sort of inspired contest, Mr. Fancy Pants. Between those two, I think, everyone who knows the songs are impressed that anyone can sing them. I mean, as well as you, not so much, but at least getting all the words out is sort of a nice a bar to reach.
Yeah, no, this one's definitely have a lot of words. I Feel Fantastic is, you know, as when I play it with the band, it just has gotten faster and faster over the years. It's now absurdly fast. You know, I listen to I put out this live album recently of, from shows with the band. And I was used to that speed. And I went back and listened to the original, I Feel Fantastic. And I was like, wow, that was really slow. Why do we do it so slow?
Well, I've seen you perform twice here in Orlando. And I think the first time you did, it was your own show. You had Paul and Storm with you. And you played The Social here in Orlando. And what I love the most, I mean, Paul and Storm were a great addition. I mean, they're fantastic musicians in their own right. And when they backed you up on, I think, Creepy Doll, and you varied, I mean, because all I had heard was the album, of course, at that point. You didn't have any live CDs. And I really enjoyed the band arrangement of that song, even more than just your original. What other songs did you feel like the band really complemented and made it more fun to perform?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to rock out when it's just you in a studio. It's hard to capture the energy of a bunch of people playing off of each other on stage. So really, you know, there are a number of songs that I have written that were meant to be exciting rock songs. And, you know, they were sort of hobbled by my inability to really make that happen in the studio. So, like, you know, Mandelbrot Set is a really kick-ass rock song that is incredibly fun to play. Shop Vac is another one. I mean, you know, all those fast, you know, guitar-heavy songs are just, they really... It was such a delight to start playing with the band because those songs really, I feel like, got a whole new life to them when I started to play with the band.
Now, I know in the second time I saw you, you were actually coming out with Artificial Heart. And I know that John Flansburgh, They Might Be Giants, had helped or was a producer on that album. And those album that those songs were specifically written with a band in mind. I think some of the They Might Be Giants band even contributed. Like, what was that process like working with Flansburgh, working with a band, and coming from just your own singer-songwriter approach?
Yeah, it was challenging, which was sort of the point. You know, I Flansburgh was the producer. I had opened for They Might Be Giants for a stretch, and you know, at some point he approached me and said, "Hey, what are you doing? Are you going to make an album? And do you want me to produce it?" And I said, "Well, sure," because it sounded terrifying. You know, I mean, those guys are heroes of mine. If you told 1990 me that I was going to know them personally and play with them, and, you know, it just would have sounded crazy to me. So I was really flattered and scared. and you know, he really encouraged me to push myself in a direction of, you know, writing for a band and thinking about what it meant to have a band on stage and, you know, what you could do that you couldn't otherwise do. So it was a challenge and a bit of a stretch. Most of my goal for that album was, I feel like I was in search of the perfect 2-minute pop song, which is, I think, an art form that is maybe underappreciated. But, you know, when you can do it, when you can find an idea that just sort of sustains itself in this really bright, exciting way for 2 minutes and then stops. And then it's like this perfect nugget of pop song. That's one of my favorite things. So yeah, that album was a lot about trying to find that thing.
So I guess, you know, looking at the tracks from that, a lot of them are, yeah, like you said, they're definitely pop inspired. I'm sure some of your fans felt like, you know, oh, he went away from the sort of niche geek humor that I, you know, that may have brought them to it. But I know for at least, you know, a few reasons, your Nemesis song with John Roderick. I mean, it's still geeky enough in a sense, but it's just a great, you know, how many times even today do you have this great little pop duet and in such great counterculture sort of.
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny. I feel like people who know me for the geeky niche stuff, you know me for the successful songs, you know. I mean, yeah. If you look at when I think of the whole, I mean, Thing a Week is, I think, a pretty representative of what I do, because I was just doing whatever I could think of week by week. And, you know, some of those are nerdy, but not all of them. And there are a lot of just straight ahead songs and songs that are kind of puzzles and hard to figure out what they're about. And so I feel like I've always written all kinds of songs. It's just that the ones that succeed the most are the nerdy ones. And, you know, I think when I was first starting to do this, it was rare to see an artist who really sort of unabashedly would write a song about math or zombies or robots. But you know, then again, like, you know, Mr. Roboto, that's a concept album about robots,
right?
You know, and nobody thought of them as a nerd act,
right?
Although they were pretty nerdy. So I don't know. But I know what you mean. You know, certainly Artificial Heart was the first time I had put out, not the first time, but you know, after Thing a Week, it was the first quote unquote album that I had put out, which is very different from a thing like Thing a Week, which is like this fire hose of whatever you happen to be doing. This was a much more, curated thing. And so, yeah, I think it strikes people as, where did all the nerd go? But it's, yeah, as you say, it's still there.
Well, and a lot of people overlook it and wrongfully so, I think, because it is a very polished album. I mean, Flansburgh's touch is, you know, probably it's there in a sense. It may not be the Flansburgh people are used to, but again, they're only used to They Might Be Giants Flansburgh and may not know his solo stuff as much. But, you know, I mean, I love Alone at Home is something I I can relate to. It's not unheard of to be dragged along, you know, or have to sort of do certain things that you may not want to do in a relationship.
Yep. Sure.
So I mean, like, people are missing out if they have not really gone through it enough. Now you did put a great, I mean, so you threw the fans a bone. You put a cover, but your performance of with Sarah Quinn Still Alive. And yeah. What I personally love, being a thereminist, I love that you have the theremin feature on that.
That's Dorit Chrysler is her name.
Wow. Oh, yeah, Dorit. Yeah, I met Dorit at Moog Fest last year. She's amazing.
Oh, yeah. She's incredible. It was, you know, there's somewhere on YouTube, there's a video and you can see her play. And it's kind of, it's even more exciting to watch her play it.
Oh, her performance is equal parts beautiful, like musical, but also very physical. She'll stab at the electromagnetic field of the theremin. She's very punctuated in certain parts of performance, and she sings too. I mean, she's a full package act. And I mean, again, other than Clara Rockmore, I think that's the only other theremist I can say by like, that I know by name. You know?
Yeah, she's great. She's great.
So I mean that song, of course, everyone who has played the Portal series knows at least in passing of your song if they beat it. You know, Still Alive is fantastic. It's a song that, you know, Gladys sings at the end. And then I Want You Gone, or sorry, Just Want You Gone, also a great bookend to the game. Now, I know Valve approached you for those songs, correct?
That's right, yeah.
And so by that point, you know, by the first Portal, you had established sort of your geek cred songwriter ability. And what was it like trying to work for a company and doing sort of not a jingle, because I know you've done jingles too, but like they wanted you to write a song, you know, what material did they give you and how much of that was just your own material brought to their project?
Well, I spoke extensively with the one of the writers of the game. You know, I got to play an early version of the game so I could sort of step through the story and learn the character GLaDOS, and So we did a lot of talking about it. But they, you know, I mean, they just let me write it myself. You know, it was mostly a process of getting a lot of deep background, and then coming back with what I thought that character would say. And, you know, they had a couple of suggestions, but, mostly it went through the way I'd conceived of it. And, you know, it's just one of those things where our sensibilities matched up really well. And that character in particular, I felt like I knew that character from the moment she started talking in that game, you know. So it was a very satisfying and fun experience.
Yeah, and I the only thing that bums me about that song in particular is, and it's a great song and I love it, is you've done karaoke tracks of all the tracks that you have Creative Commons license, you know, you released as a CC license, but I guess those two, because Valve owns them, you can't release them that way, so there's no karaoke tracks.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure if I would be allowed to do that or not. It's I have to go back and look at the various contracts that I signed 10 years ago. But
well, if a fan wanted to do that as a very unofficial, not for sale kind of thing, hopefully Valve would be cool. And
yeah, I mean, of course, I don't speak for them, but they, in my experience, they, you know, when Portal came out and everybody was going crazy and making Portal related stuff, they were pretty cool about all of the fan created stuff, as long as it was non-commercial. You know, they seem like their heart's in the right place on that stuff.
Yeah, no, I remember when the Portal products flood the market and they weren't really official, and they were interesting. So moving on real quick, I don't want to hold you too long, but of course you've had some great success with projects like your Joko Crazy Cruise, which I saw just happened, and every year I realize it's happening, and I'm like, I should do that sometime. And has that been a pretty fun and fulfilling thing for you to do, to meet your fans and to bring all other friends and fellow, like, you know, I mean, I hate to say geeky artisans, but, you know, looking at the list, you know, you got Will Wheaton, John Scalzi, you know, you got Paul and Storm, you got a lot of guys who definitely are in that sort of space with you.
Oh, yeah. It's a blast. I mean, it's such a great time. It's this year we were about 850 people on this cruise ship, and I mean, you know, it's a party. It's a week long summer camp, and yeah, we bring comedians and musicians and other kinds of entertainers, and we try to program it in a way that you know, certainly there's some nerdy stuff that we all know and love, but we also try to bring in some artists that are outside the circles, because there's a lot of good stuff that's not nerdy. And, you know, it's like, it's nice to be able to introduce stuff that we think is good to this crowd, because, you know, the crowd is really open to new experiences. It's one of my favorite thing about that group of people is that as a community, they're just fantastic. They love to try stuff out, and it's really fun. You should come. Everyone should come.
I will. As long as you keep doing them, there's a great likelihood that I will make it one of these years. Another cool project, and I was very thrilled to get in as a backer for this, was the Kickstarter project you did, or Greg Pak and you, and I guess Miyazawa as the artist, to make a graphic novel, which to me, you know, given that I love, you know, and know very well all of your earlier works and your stronger, like, you know, character-based sort of songs, it felt like this was the closest thing at the moment to that musical that has all your songs woven into a story. So yeah, the right. Code Monkey Save World, a graphic novel and, you know, 4-issue comic book series, which is still available, right? The Kickstarter went out, but I mean, it's still, I think, up on Comixology, and you can order it, I'm sure, through your website or PAX website or both.
I think just Greg's right now.
Okay. I mean, and overall, I mean, it again, if you know the characters, I mean, certainly if you're not familiar with Jonathan's work, I don't know that you'd get much other than it's a fun story and it's beautifully drawn. But I mean, were you pretty, did you enjoy seeing your characters brought to life and knit together in this way?
Oh, yeah, it was really fun. I hadn't really, you know, the way all the stories kind of loop back on themselves, was certainly not an intentional thing as I was writing them, but it's always been interesting for people other than me to come in and say, oh, look, this character kind of is in this story too. You know, it's really a cool thing. And Greg, I think, did a fantastic job of knitting everything together and coming up with a world that somehow includes all those various crazy things. And yeah, I thought it was great. I was really impressed with the job he did, and as you say, it's a great story. It's beautifully drawn, and it was just a fun, really fun project to work on.
One more question, and I know you got to go. The Ask Me Another, I mean, again, we talked to Ophir previously. We came up and saw your great live show during your Comic Con with Neil Gaiman. I mean, that show, I know, was pitched, you know, we talked to Ophir about how that sort of evolved, but, you know, is that something that you do and you bring a lot of your own stuff to, or is it kind of more of a, you know, you're a part of the team, you show up, you do the gig, and I mean, what are your thoughts on sort of being in that Ask Me Another space? You know, what kind of experience is it for you?
It's a really fun gig. I got to say, we have such a good time doing it. And there's a whole team of people who are working on every show. You know, there are people who are booking the guests and writing the puzzles and putting the script together. You know, I tend to do a music game every episode, and somebody writes that puzzle. You know, I might tweak a couple of things, cause I am a professional songwriter, as you know. But you know, it really couldn't happen without everybody doing their part. But you know, all that said, one of my favorite things about that show is that once it's Ophira and I on stage in front of an audience, you know, we do have the script, but so much of the fun happens in between the script, you know,
right.
And stuff that the way the contestants behave on stage and running gags that develop over the course of an episode. And one of my favorite things is that job is basically I get to stand on stage and riff and say funny things. And it's one of my favorite things to do. So I'm once again, find myself in the very strange and fortunate position of having it be my job to do a thing that is fun.
I mean, and it's you can tell how fun it is both as a live, you know, being in the audience, you can see the amount of fun you guys are having, and also just listening. When we first heard the show, I think I lit up when I realized that you were on it. And then we love quiz shows and trivia and all that anyway. So, you know, between the two, Pat and myself, like, we both got just a great joy out of hearing it. And every week, you know, and Ophira is fantastic. You. I just, you know.
Yeah, she's so funny. It's so great to work with her. We've sort of developed a rhythm together, and it's just such a pleasure to be on stage with her.
Well, I think it's all about all the time we got. And I really, again, thank you so much for doing this. And for those of you guys who are interested in more about Mr. Colton, you can go to jonathancolton.com. Any and everything is there. You can read about all the craziness with Glee that happened a few years ago. You can read about all that, because you have a great blog on there as well. And it, I noticed that you've stopped writing it as much, but there's still a lot of great material.
Yeah. Every 6 months, I write a long blog post about something.
Well,
yeah, but blogging's dead. You know that, right?
Well, Andrew Sullivan said so. Yeah, I mean, I totally understand. Yeah. No, it's a great treasure trove, though. If you're interested in more of your both written and musical material, all of it's up there. And you can learn all about the Joko Crazy Cruise and everything else you're doing coming up that you want to talk about, or?
I am working on a new album right now. I don't have a date for when it'll be finished, but it's really very recently started to feel like we've made some real progress, and I hope that it will be out sometime this year.
Cool. Well, I look forward to hearing that. Thank you again for joining us, and thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of Tops and Bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast, or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.